Welcome to Career Tools. This week, your annual career checkup, part two. The questions this class answers are, what is a career checkup? Why would I want to do a career checkup? And how often should I do a career checkup?
Hey everyone, Kate here. The latest update to the Manager Tools app includes the ability to track coaching and delegation with Roadmap. So if you're a licensed member, you can access Roadmap through the Manager Tools application. And now that app will track all of your Trinity behaviors, including coaching and delegation. Figure out who to coach and on what using Roadmap. It'll even walk you through the steps and help you to set goals and deliverables around coaching. You can also add photos of your notes to each coaching instance to keep track of your handwritten one-on-one notes for that particular coaching scenario. Use Roadmap to decide the who, what, and how of delegating to your team members, all within the recommended timeframes for Trinity rollout. We'll remind you when and how. It's like having the Trinity in your pocket.
The next piece of this is talking to your boss about your aspirations and intentions. Now, years ago, the company managed your career. That is, there was a clear path from certain jobs to the top of the organization. It was clear who could get on the path and who could not get on the path, that some jobs had benefits and that some had obvious problems. Currently, the zeitgeist seems to be that we all want to be individuals in control of our own lives and our own careers. And this means that we have to pay attention to what we want and how we are going to do it. Now, your career plans don't have to be a secret. We tend to think that they should be because a job search needs to be kept confidential. However, it's better for you and the company if you can find opportunities to explore the things that you want to do more of within that same company. Now, it's better for the company because hiring is extremely expensive. Retention, as we know, is something that's important for organizations. And it's better for you because you've built up career goodwill with this company. Career goodwill being the measure of all the things you've done that helped out someone else, or the times when you've put what the company needed before what you yourself wanted to do. And that goodwill means that when you ask for something that you want, it increases your likelihood of actually getting it.
So if you have a friend who works in a different department, so if I think about Tracy, who works in our finance department, the number of times she's asked me to help her out with something, with a document, with finding something, with knowing something about something that's going on with someone else, with interpreting Mark's calendar, you know, I've helped her out a bunch. If I call her and say, I am stuck with this spreadsheet, I can't make it work, she will help me because we have that favor exchange. I have been building the emotional bank account, if you've read Covey. I have goodwill with her. She has goodwill towards me because I have helped her. And you do that with everybody you're working with. And so the more you do that, the more goodwill you have. And the harder it is when you change companies, because you don't have any of that built up. It becomes much harder to do things, to achieve things. And you can grow it again. You will grow it again. But it's one thing that people don't take into account when they think about changing jobs. You lose all of that institutional goodwill. If you go to your current boss and you ask for something out of the ordinary, hopefully you have some goodwill stored up with him that will encourage him to go to bat for you. So, and that out of the ordinary here means something that you want that isn't necessarily what the company wants. Something that will cost the company money, you moving to another role, moving to a different location, anything that will get in the way of business as usual. If I said, okay, someone in my family is sick and I want to go and work in England for the next 3 months so I can be with my family member, that would disrupt business as usual. I could carry on working, but I would be going to bed when there is still work going on at Manager Tools, and the people at Manager Tools would be like, oh, I'm going to call, oh, no, I can't call Wendy. And it would be difficult. Now, I have enough goodwill that I have done enough things for Mark and the people who work here and for the company that Mark would just say yes. Well, that's part of who he is as a manager too. But if he weren't that way, and if I didn't have any goodwill, he would make it, you know, more difficult for me. So that's what goodwill is and why moving makes things harder.
Mm-hmm. You moving to another role, for example, means that some of the time, your role won't be done as well as it was done because the new person who is in that job now will need to learn it. That is, for a time, your current role will see a drop in quality due to the new person getting up to speed. Furthermore, the job you're moving to won't be done as well as it was previously because you are in the same boat. You need to learn that job. You've never done it before. The company is suffering from reduced productivity to give you what you want. And that's why you have to have some goodwill before asking for something that you want. So if you do want to be a manager and you're currently an individual contributor, keep in mind that it will be much easier for you to become a manager at the company in which you currently work. To move from individual contributor to a manager is a hard move. It's difficult enough. Without adding the complications of developing, as Wendy said, those new relationships, the reputation at a new company, having other people know you and want to help you, you might be afraid of the one person that you think will take your promotion badly. However, what you're also forgetting is all of the people that will support you and help you to be successful in your new role. And that support, the support of others, the relationships with others in the organizations, is invaluable as you muddle your way through being a new manager and taking that next step in your career.
It reminds me of getting married in a weird way. Getting married, becoming a couple, is hard enough. Everybody says that. I've never been married. I'm not that brave. But, you know, becoming married is hard enough. If you marry someone who already has children, that becomes exponentially harder because you have to do the relationship with your new spouse. You have to get used to being a couple, all the things that go into marriage. But then you have to develop relationships with these children too, and the relationship with your spouse with that child, right? Because it's not a direct relationship just between you and that child. What your spouse wants, it influences that too. If you go from being an individual contributor to being a manager, that's like getting married. It's hard enough. But if you do that in a new company, it's like adding children to that. Other people's children, you're just making it way harder. And I really don't think people consider that. They're like, I'm going to be a manager and I'll have a fresh slate and it'll be really easy. No.
That's not true. So this conversation where you're talking to your boss about your aspirations, your intentions, this is something that you want to make note of as a very important conversation. That is, do not try to squeeze this conversation between a couple of other things or have it as like an afterthought tacked on to like one of your one-on-ones. You want to warn your boss that this is what you want to talk about, right? Now, especially if you're a high S or a high C and they or you need time to think and prepare, but you want to have time set aside for this conversation. It's extremely important, and it's way too important to fit in between back-to-back conference calls on a day when there's like a zillion things to do and people are running around not making note of this conversation. It's important, so make sure that you give that impression. It's important to you.
Okay, next up is know your worth. So it is pretty much universal that employees think that they should be paid more than they are. Pretty much no one offered a pay rise has ever turned it down. Never happened. However, your value is only what the market will bear. So imagine you're selling a house. If you think it's worth $1 million and you put it on the market, you go to a realtor, you say, I want to sell my house, I want to sell it for $1 million, and nobody buys it, is it worth $1 million? No.
Not so much.
It's worth whatever someone will pay for it. It's not worth what you think it is. And there's a perception, a fallacy that things we own have more value than they actually have, which is why people, when they're having yard sales, want to sell everything for way more than people want to buy it for. But it was mine. I bought it and it was special. It's worth whatever someone will pay for it. And that's the same for intellect and labor. So what you are worth as a worker is based on what the market will pay, not how much you think you should get, or how much your mortgage is, or how much your spouse wants to spend, or how much you need for your kids to go to private school. None of those things are relevant.
No, they're not relevant. Not to the person who is paying for your intellect and labor. So in order for you to get that measure of how much is that worth in the market, periodically, you need to research how much your skills are worth locally, regionally, nationally. And we do have guidance on this in our podcast called How to Get a Raise. I'm sorry, it's a series, How to Get a Raise. And do not take this research to your boss and immediately ask for a pay raise. That's not what the research is for.
No, what we're trying to find out is, what am I worth in the marketplace? You may decide that you're going to go and ask for a pay rise, but that's not necessarily it. Remember, we are in a gathering information about the current situation. We're not yet making decisions. And one of the things that happens is if you stay in a company, salaries get compressed. So this is what happens. You join a company at a fair market rate. Let's say it's $100,000 because I like round numbers. You get 2% increases each year, right? After 5 years, you're on roughly 110,000. So the first year, 2% of 100,000 is 102,000. The next year, you get 2% of 102,000. If you do that for 5 years, you end up around 110. Now, the market for your skills outside of your company may have risen 5% each year. So 100,000 plus 5% is 105,000. If you keep doing that math, you get to 127. So in your company, you're being paid 110. Outside, you're being paid 127. So a lot of people will look at that and think, I am worth 127. I'm going to go and get an offer, and then I'm going to tell my boss I want 127. But what they're not taking into account is the value of the non-salary items, which often go with tenure. So for example, you might only get 10 days of vacation when you join that company. But in your company, because you've been there 5 years, they give you an extra day of vacation every year. So now you're on 15 days of vacation. You might have training that you're allowed to do after a certain time. Your pension contribution might go up. Your health insurance might change. You definitely will have, if you've worked well with relationships and goodwill and favors, you will have more clout and more flexibility at your current role. So if you want to work different hours, or you want to work from a different location, or you want to take some unpaid time off because, you know, somebody is ill, all of those things you are much more likely to get if you've been at a company 5 years than 5 minutes after you've joined. So when you look at the comparison, do look at the salary number. There is a difference between 110 and 127, and I wish I'd done the math, because those kind of increases always work out to a very minor amount per month when you add the tax in and all the other things. So the difference between 110 and 127 isn't actually necessarily what you think it is. Plus, there's all these non-salary benefits. And just because a job is advertised at a certain rate, that doesn't mean that that rate is being paid or will be paid to you. In the same way that houses are listed $1 million, nobody ever offers $1 million. They offer 950,000, and the person accepts 975, right?
Yes, exactly.
So what the salary is being advertised at is not necessarily what you'll be paid. So it is important to understand the market for your skills. And it's equally important to understand the benefits you're getting now and the value you would put on those, and then make the decision.
It might lead you to decide to look for a new role in the next year, to put the work in to get a raise or a promotion, or to decide that the fact that you have a 10-minute commute and can pick your children up from school every day is worth more to you than the difference in salaries at another job. There are just all too many variables that play into what you get at a job, and salary is only one of those variables. It is not the be-all, end-all.
It's really important to understand.
Absolutely. Very true.
So all of those sections were in the current situation. So we've done all the assessing of the current situation, and now we're going to take some action. So the first action is enhance your value. So as we said, if you're standing still, you're going backwards. So this is about making yourself more valuable to the company.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that tends to happen when we've been in a role for a while is that we get bogged down with all of the things that we have to do right now. And we don't lift our head up and look at what's going on around us. Once we've reviewed our current situation, the next step really is to pick your head up and look around at the broader environment. So, what are your competitors doing? What are other companies in your industry doing? What are other people in your profession doing? And what ideas will translate from somewhere else to your team? Now, there are many reasons we're going to ask this. First, what you might learn is that this will color your plans for the future. Maybe you learn that a competitor is on the cutting edge of something new, and you decide that you want to be working there in the next couple of years. Now, what that could mean is a change in plans, in that you now have to think about how you're going to increase your network, increase your relationships with other people, to develop relationships with individuals who are working in the place that you have set your sights on for the future.
Second, you might learn that the future is in plastics. Well, probably not, because it's a movie line from the 70s. But could any of us imagine 30 years ago how mobile we would be? I remember before there were computers. The idea that we would have a phone that would follow us around is mind-boggling. That we would have high-speed internet on our phones. In 2 years from now, in 2020, there will be 5 billion people on the internet. 2 years, which will go past in a flash. People are taking mortgages out, which are longer, car loans, which are longer than that period. It's amazing. So what does your website look when it's Google translated into Chinese or Spanish? Right? Because there's going to, out of those 5 billion people, not all of them are going to be speaking English. A lot of them won't. Do you need to create your software in more languages? There are thousands of questions that come up from that very...
The one thing.
One small fact that is going to be true in the very near term. Even electric cars, they say 5 to 10 years. There will be 5 billion users of the internet before there will be electric cars. And yet you hear so much about electric cars and what is going to change and insurance and car parks and all of those things. And yet I rarely hear someone say, there's 5 billion users of the internet. What does that mean for me? So what does that mean for your job, your company, and your career?
And the last piece is, you can look incredibly smart in meetings when you say something like, I saw some interesting data from company X who've been doing Y, and they are finding that their customers prefer it. Of course, looking smart and being smart are two different things, but it's a good start though. Knowing what's going on in the environment around you, being able to comment on it and utilize that information to influence your career choices is very beneficial.
So that was a short part. We did current situation, we did enhance your value, and now we're going to do invest in your future. Because part of what you've just done is look at your potential futures. You've thought about what things are going to affect your company, your job, your industry. And so now we're going to think about, what do I need to do to invest in the future that I want, or invest in obtaining the future I want? And the first one is continue to learn.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Professionals never stop learning. That's why all the CEO profiles that you read say that this CEO reads a lot of books. That's the one way of learning new things that you can do. It's cheap. It's easy to get. You can learn about new subjects or gain new perspectives on older subjects. It doesn't matter whether it's your industry, your profession that you're learning more about. Learning more about anything is valuable. Your industry is the business area that your company is in. So for example, steel or fast-moving consumer goods or IT consulting. Whereas your profession is the job that you do within that company. So for example, a programmer or an accountant or a human resource professional within some specific industry.
So they can be cross. So you can have someone who is HR in a steel company, but you can also have HR in an IT consulting company. So you can learn about your industry or your profession or the combination of both. there's lots of things to learn. And you can learn just about anything online. There are sites such as lynda.com and skillshare.com and Coursera and Udemy and a whole bunch of others that I don't know, with hundreds of courses. YouTube has hundreds of courses. Many are free and the rest are inexpensive. I had one of those box cutter. It was just a cheap plastic one that has the blade, and the blade has like these diagonal things scored into it. And I've never known what they were for. And the blade was going blunt. And I was like, this is really weird. Like, why? I don't understand this. So surely those diagonal things have something and I'm not supposed to throw it out before I've used the whole blade. I Googled box cutter blade blunt or something. And there is a YouTube video. And this lady says, I never knew this, and I have never found anybody else talking about this. You take off the black end, and you slide it on, and it lines up with that diagonal line, and you just break it off. I was like, whoa.
Mind blown.
It was. So, you know, YouTube is useful for small things, but there's also 2-hour-long courses on YouTube, which are also free. And many universities publish their courses online for free. These are sometimes called MOOCs, M-O-O-C, which is...
I think it's Massive Open Online Course.
Yes, that's it. And it's good colleges like Harvard and Yale and Stanford and Chicago and, you know, all of those. And a lot of the time, you don't even have to be in the country to sign up and take advantage of them.
You can sign up for anything that looks interesting, learning a skill. And when you're learning to learn the subject matter... It doesn't matter to some extent.
Because the learning is a skill in itself. Learning to learn is a skill in itself. So to some extent, the subject doesn't matter.
Exactly. However, since this is a career checkup, you might want to think about learning skills that you don't have, more about skills that you have a weakness in, or skills you'll need when you get to where you want to go. If you struggle with time management, for example, probably spend some time learning about time management. If you struggle with Excel, spend some time learning about Excel. Whatever you want to learn, we can almost guarantee there is a course for you. There are courses for everything. Box cutters.
Exactly. And I think sometimes people think, oh, I'm going to learn something highfalutin. Like I decided I wanted to learn something about InDesign, which is a graphic design program. But equally, I could benefit from learning about time management, or I could benefit from learning more about the website that we use and using it every single day and the things that I can do on it. We sometimes think it has to be something really interesting and something we know nothing about, whereas improving our basic skills, one of the things I do a lot on Excel is conditional formatting. So we have a number of spreadsheets, including the onboarding checklist, if you listen to Manager Tours and you've seen that, where there's a task and a due date for that task. If the due date is more than 3 days ahead, the cell is white. If it's in the next 3 days, the cell is orange. If it's overdue, it's red. If it's done, it's green. The cell color changes automatically based on what's in the cell. That's called conditional formatting. And probably 50%, I don't know, of people who use Excel know how to do that, and the other 50 don't. And yet it's incredibly useful. There are things that are baked into Excel. It's an incredibly flexible and powerful program, and yet most people use it for adding up a series of numbers, drawing a graph.
For drawing graphs.
So don't necessarily think, oh, I have to go learn something new, something highfalutin. I have to, you know, learn something that's on an MBA syllabus. You don't. Think about the things that you do every day and whether it's worth trying to enhance those skills as well as learn those bigger things.
And you can be more deliberate about your learning plan. We'd recommend beginning with courses for skills that you currently struggle with. These are the courses that will have the highest amount of leverage. That is, the ones that will make the most difference to you in your current state are the ones with which you struggle right now. And after that, you can take a course for fun or one that's, like, as Wendy said, teaches you something that you don't necessarily know or need right now. But it tends to be really low-hanging fruit, enhancing skills that you yourself are currently struggling with or could find immediate benefit in.
That low-hanging fruit is a really important point because it's harder, especially when you've been out of university for 400 years, like me. It's actually quite hard to sit and learn, to take notes, to pay attention, to not race ahead and think that I know what's going to come next. And so actually taking courses in things that you struggle with but are relatively low level and of which you have a grounding. So we'll go back to Excel. If you use Excel every day and you know, you understand worksheets, you understand cells, you understand rows and columns and the difference between them and so on, and you know where things roughly are on the ribbon, then learning about conditional formatting takes a lot of the knowledge that you already have and enhances it. And if you haven't learned anything, if you haven't done a course, or if you're just not practiced in online courses, it would be much better to do that course. It's probably quite short as well, where you have a good grounding in the topic before you go and try and learn physics. I'm sure there is a course online that's about how the universe was created. I have no concept. You know, there is a planet, it's Earth, we live on it, it goes around the sun. That's about my knowledge. So actually, when I do a course about physics or the universe, I have to learn to sit still, I have to learn to watch, I have to learn to listen, I have to learn to take notes, or at least remember all those skills that I used to have that I don't use very often now. And then I have to grasp what somebody is talking about in the universe.
Exactly.
Whereas if I was learning something about Excel that I didn't know, I have a really good grounding with Excel. It just takes one part of the difficulty away.
Absolutely. And when we think about learning something new, we usually make that activity more difficult than it needs to be. That is, we oftentimes think about, let's go on a training course, preferably one that's in Florida in February, or let's do an executive education course, like an MBA. Now, there's lots of room in between an hour-long online course and an MBA. There are hundreds of thousands of people doing their job and completing an MBA or other graduate level courses at the same time. It is absolutely doable. And starting there is the largest fruit there is. You don't need to do step one at the largest thing there is. Start with one simple online course. The courses are generally short. You can probably get through one in a weekend, in a couple of days, even if you let it take a month. If you could fit 12 courses into a year, you'd continually be learning something new.
You would learn a lot in 12 courses in a year. And training courses are the most expensive option for your company. Right? If somebody comes to one of our training conferences, they have to pay us for the training. That's a number. But they also have to pay that person to travel there. They have to pay a hotel night, possibly. They have to pay in a non-financial sense for that person to be out of the office that day. You know, things might happen. That person has to be covered. Their work has to be covered. Somebody has to make sure that, you know, nothing urgent happens, you know. So there are a bunch of costs to someone coming to a training course, which are much more than just the cost of the training. But at one, you might get approval for an online course. And since many of them are $10 a month or $20 a month, even if you don't get approval, you could start there. You could afford that yourself by not having two Starbucks coffees. And if you can demonstrate to your boss, look, I'm really interested in learning this skill. I think it's really useful to the company because of this. I have done these three online courses and that has enabled me to do X and Y and the benefit has been Z. And the next step is to go onto this training course, which is in Florida in February. And I would like you to approve that cost. You are much more likely to get that cost approved for that training course than you would have done if you just started there. You got to show willing, you got to show some effort, you got to show that you're interested in it and that it's a benefit. And now that there's an online course about absolutely everything, there's a really easy way for you to do that.
It's absolutely true. We also have a podcast called How to Prepare for a Training Event.
We do.
I believe is what it's called. And it also gives you information on how to brief your manager afterwards. That is, if you're going to exert the energy in an online course, don't just absorb the knowledge yourself. Make sure your manager knows. You're putting yourself out there. You're making an effort to learn and improve. Putting it just as a checkbox on professional development for your annual evaluation is good, but it's a waste of an opportunity to show your manager that you want to learn and that you have gained valuable knowledge in these previous learning environments, such that they're more likely to then ask for training budget or send you out of the office to do that higher level kind of stuff. If you're one of the many managers who's been promoted into leadership due to your outstanding performance as an individual contributor, congratulations, you've earned this. Wait, what? You mean no one told you that the skills you spent your entire career honing would now collect dust while your directs do the work you love? And now you're in a role that frankly can't be that hard because it's not like we're going to train you to do it. Or are we? If you feel thrown into people management without a life raft, the Effective Manager Conference is for you. We help subject matter experts become the managers they weren't quite sure they could be by providing a step-by-step, actionable process for being people leaders. Visit us at manager-tools.com/training to register today.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week and we'll carry on talking about your annual career checkup.